the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider. My special guest this week on Vatican Insider are two seminarians of the Pontifical North American College in Rome, Nicholas Manin and Patrick Ernst of the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend. Now, we met during the October 2023 Synod on Synodality when I invited Bishop Kevin Rhodes of Fort Wayne, Patrick and Nicholas, and two Fort Wayne priests studying at NAC, Zane Langenbrunner and Samuel Anderson, for dinner. Now, every so often on Vatican Insider, my listeners know, I feature stories on vocations, but I haven't done it in a while. And it's time to do that, especially after I learned of these wonderful stories last October over dinner. First of all, welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Now, I'm here today to talk to both of you about your path to the calling, to the vocation of priesthood. And it will be interesting to hear the similarities and perhaps even some differences on that path. Now, on that note, Patrick, tell us a bit about yourself, your family, your parish, your interests, hobbies.
I grew up in on the south side of South Bend in Indiana.
Okay, go Irish.
Yeah. I come from a family of six people total, three siblings. I'm the youngest. And I grew up going to St. Matthew's Cathedral on the south side. I went to Marian High School. And then after that, I went to Franciscan University in Steubenville.
Oh, good.
And had a wonderful time there. And now my family and I currently go to St. Pius, the 10th Church in Granger, which is a city just north of South Bend.
Oh, I don't know that city. Yeah. I haven't been to South Bend, especially for a football game, in a while. But, you know, and Nicholas, the same basic information from you.
Sure. So I also grew up in South Bend. My home parish, in fact, is the same, St. Matthew's Cathedral, on the south side, although my family lives on the north side of the city. And I'm the youngest of three siblings. And I went to St. Joseph High School in South Bend, so the other kind of rival Catholic high school in South Bend. Yeah, and then after high school, I entered the college seminary right after graduation. And so I spent 4 years at Bishop Simon Brute College Seminary in Indianapolis.
Oh.
So I took philosophy classes at Marian University, and then I received formation at the college seminary.
Oh, well, that's fascinating. If you had said that over dinner, I did not recall it. I'd love to know from each of you when, it sounds like you've just answered it, so when you first heard the call, but even how, who was important in your life, if it's God who calls you to the priesthood. Tell me about your calling.
I would say mine began in high school, but I wasn't ready at the time. The vocations director at the time, for me, recommended that I go to college, and that was a very good decision. I needed that time just to mature and to grow into the man that I am now. I was first invited to go to a group in high school called the Melchizedek Project, a group that gets together every week and discusses Father Brett Brannan's book, To Save a Thousand Souls, with discussion questions and everything like that. I thought I had a better use of my time
of course.
during that group, of course, but the Lord planted that book in my life for a very special reason. And I went off to college, and that book found its way back to me. I somehow, you know, stuffed it in my bag. It came back to me one night after playing pool, because that was the fun thing to do in college. And I started flipping through it, and the things that a priest does just like lit this fire in my heart. And it was so enriching. I could see myself in my mind's eye hearing confessions, saying Mass, immersing myself in studies here and there. And so I just really wanted to do the things that a priest does. And so I had no idea what that looks like. And I think that's why I said I needed that time in college for that thought to develop and for that.
To discern.
Yeah, and to discern and to talk to other people as well. And so, and people kept coming back to me and saying, you should be a priest. And I was like, well, okay. And I started to pray about it and take their opinions and their thoughts to heart. And it really, I think, solidified into at least a good calling to seminary. And so I took them up on it and discerned right after college to enter pre-theology. So I did my pre-theology at Mount St. Mary's in Emmitsburg, Maryland,
right.
And then was asked to come to the North American College, and now I'm in my second year of formation here, so I'm really enjoying it here so far.
Well, you know, I'm definitely hearing the Lord's call in that. What a great story. Okay, and your call, and who was responsible in your life and important?
Yeah, so I use the word organic to talk about my vocation story, because a lot of my story comes from growing up in the parish and having a really good pastor in my parish who showed me the joy of the priesthood and a life lived for Christ. And so as a kid, that was just implanted in me, that seed of a man who was joyful living the priesthood vocation.
Nicholas, joy is important for all of us.
That's true.
It's important for any vocation, and it can be a vocation of medicine. Joy is going to make others look at you. Doesn't the Bible say we're supposed to tell people the reason for our joy?
That's right.
So yeah. That is beautiful.
Yeah, so joy really, I mean, it can be an instrument for evangelization, for sharing your life with Christ, because what people pick up on is that your joy comes from somewhere, some great well that they want to share in. They want to experience that too. So I experienced that in my life. My pastor was so joyful living his priestly vocation that even from the beginning, although I wouldn't have recognized it or been able to articulate it, certainly planted that seed for me. And then in high school, I had a powerful experience at one of our discernment retreats. We had a group of young men get together in Fort Wayne at St. Vincent de Paul Parish. And before the Blessed Sacrament, similar, Patrick, actually, to what you said, I imagined myself doing what a priest does. I brought up that image and allowed the Lord to work in that space. And the Lord just put on my heart this great peace, this great a desire to do his will. And he revealed my life to me. In a real way, what I asked the Lord in that moment was, Lord, is this a thing that I was made for? Because I think that's really the question.
Sure.
Like a vocation is a call that the Lord has put on your heart for you to get to heaven. Like, yeah. It's the reason for your life. And the Lord showed that to me in some way in that moment of Eucharistic adoration. And then my life after that was a series of yeses. So I talked to the vocation director, and he said, okay, well, why don't you be a high schooler for a little bit and just continue to live your life and live out high school? And then after high school, I applied first to the seminary because that's where I thought the Lord was calling me. And I just kept saying yes. And after 4 years in the college seminary, Bishop Rhodes asked me to come study in Rome.
Wow.
And I said yes. You know, so, and that's really the path of discipleship. In any case, it's saying yes to the Lord as he opens doors to you.
Now, Patrick, family, what is the role of family in this, your parents, siblings, other relatives, in a vocation?
I was thinking about that just the other day, because my family's coming in here to Rome pretty soon. They say it takes a village to raise a child. I would say it's true with the parish priest. I think it takes a village to raise someone in the seminary, just into parish life and helping them coming to a mature discernment in his vocation. There comes a point in a man's vocation where he does a discernment up to a certain point, but then it becomes the church's part to discern whether that man is ready or not. And that comes through the work of formators, through spiritual directors. But for my own family in particular, they have been on board with me every step of the way, which has been just very affirming and helpful in my own discernment.
Of course. You have to know you have that backing. I think it's important that no matter what field of work, in this case a calling, one chooses, just to know mom and dad, brothers and sisters, neighbors, aunts and uncles, that they're behind you. That has to give you so much courage, courage to continue, but joy.
I think
also.
So, yeah. And there are some, I think with many careers and such, there are some uncertainties as to like how it may work out and where you may end up. But long as you have your family behind you, I think you're set.
Well, because also in the church, there's obedience, so that once you're ordained, you go back to your diocese, your bishop decides where you're going to be, maybe as an assistant pastor, maybe even as a chaplain. But in another life, the life of a doctor, lawyer, somebody else, people look at a corporate ladder they can travel up. So if you start at the lowest level, you know that if you work hard and love what you're doing, the next level's this, et cetera, et cetera. But with you all, it's a lot of obedience. So, and the same thing, Nicholas, your family.
Yeah, my family has always been supportive of my vocation. I remember the first time I came home after I had a meeting with the vocation director, and I was just applying to the seminary, and my parents were cooking dinner, and they're like, well, yeah, what was your meeting about? I hadn't quite talked to them about how I was thinking about applying to the seminary. And when I had told them that I was really thinking seriously about applying, my parents were ecstatic. They really said, you know, if you feel called to this, like we're behind you. We're with you. We support you all the way. And really, that's the that's really what you need, I think.
Sure. Yeah, I love meeting the parents when there's the weekend of the diaconate ordination here, you know, at the Basilica. I just love meeting the parents because I already know they're going to be stupendous people. I've known their son. You know, not that I know everyone by name, obviously, in your class, but still, I just know they're going to be great people. And the fact that, obviously, they're here in Rome for that moment is very, very special. Now, Nicholas, you kind of told us a minute ago about your path here to Rome, and it was the bishop who sent you. And what was your path here to Rome, I mean, to getting to the North American?
For me, I was asked to consider coming here about around a year before my time finished at pre-theology at Mount St. Mary's. And really, at the end of the day, I couldn't find a reason to say no to coming over here. And so everything seemed to line up. I had my family's support as well. My diocese was on board with it. It seemed like a very simple decision for me. I really couldn't find a reason to say no, as I said.
Anybody who has followed my blog and all my reports on church activities and the gazillions of pictures I've posted about life in Rome, etc., they know what a stupendous, beautiful city this is. It's stupendous for many reasons. You have ancient history, you have art and music, and looking at the ancient civilizations and the Catholic Church, 2,000 years of that, so it's exciting. But what does it mean for each of you as a seminarian to be in Rome as opposed to being in another seminary in America, or having continued your studies? Nicholas?
I think I would highlight first the walk we have to classes every day. So
yeah.
We don't study at our where we live. We
Corso walk, Vittorio Emanuele, I'm guessing, is a big part
exactly,
of it.
Exactly, exactly. So we walk into the city, to the university, and we walk by all these churches that have all these saints in them. So suddenly, we're celebrating a saint's feast day, and we could stop in not that far off of our path, and stop in and see them and to spend some time with them and ask for their intercession. And so I think just the history of the church comes alive, John, just like you were saying. Like, we're walking the same streets that these saints walked. So in a real way, the history comes alive for us. And then, yeah, the church calendar comes alive as we're celebrating these saints that maybe we've never encountered in a real way, but somehow we're able to really, you know, really have a get to know them and
absolutely
really get to live in the same city as them.
WTN, communicating the faith.
First of all, I would like to say that I'm so appreciative of EWTN. It has been a great help to me with respect to my Catholic faith, and I really rely on the great programs that EWTN offers each and every day.
Well, just thank you to EWTN. I was a fallen away Catholic, and listened to EWTN and brought me back, so thank you so much.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN radio services transmit 24/7 on over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio affiliates, satellite radio, and web streaming. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
There are a lot of ways to pray. When I was in the evangelical world, we didn't like rote prayers that the Catholics prayed. Nah, we wanted to say our own prayers. We thought that it was coming more from the heart. Any kind of prayer, whether it comes from the heart and is a loose connection of words, or it is a prayer that the church has had for centuries, is good because it is prayer.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my conversation with Patrick Ernst and Nicholas Manin, seminarians at the North American College from the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend, as they tell us the beautiful stories of their vocation to the priesthood. Tell our listeners about the Station Churches.
Sure. So the Station Churches is a tradition, it's a very old tradition in the church, but at the North American College, the seminarians revived this if I'm not mistaken, in the 70s, I mean, 60s or 70s, they revived it. And so every day during Lent, we celebrate Mass at a different church in the city. And a group will walk every morning in the dark streets of Rome to the different churches every day. And so we start on Ash Wednesday at Santa Sabina, the same church that the Holy Father celebrates his Ash Wednesday Mass. And the whole community will gather, and then every day during Lent, we will walk in the dark streets of Rome every morning to a different place, and we'll go as far out as St. Paul outside the walls, which is an hour's walk.
Oh, at least.
And so you get there at sunrise, and it's just beautiful. Just the, it's a really beautiful way to enter into Lent and to see a lot of beautiful churches that you otherwise might not have the opportunity to.
Well, Lent is prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, and maybe they should add something about self-discipline to get up at those hours of the morning to get down to some of the other churches. I've just done a couple of the churches. I've never done the entire 6 weeks. I don't have that discipline, I guess. Each time I did it, it was so memorable because you also see ambassadors, you see teachers from schools, you see people who simply love this tradition, faithful Catholics. So it's a very, very meaningful. But other than something like that, what is very special about being in Rome for you as seminarians, as future priests?
I think what's really important for us is to see the universality of the church. So we see this in a number of ways. Of course, we're close to the Holy Father. I mean, our college is close to him. We can go and go to the Sunday audience, the Sunday Angelus any week and to see him. We've been blessed in a number of opportunities to meet him personally, which is really a blessing.
Yeah.
And so just the universality of seeing the Holy Father. But then even at our universities, we have students, we're not all Americans. In fact, my class is 150 students, and we come
at
the Gregorian University, and we have students from Africa and Asia and all over Europe and all over South America. So when you talk with them, their encounter of the church, their understanding of the faith is just so, it's so different, but it's the same faith.
But even how Mass or any liturgy is celebrated in a different culture, just learning about that. So, and for you, Patrick, some of the important elements for you being in Rome and then your future as a priest, what would you bring to your parish, having been here?
Yeah, I would echo that and say the universality has helped me immensely. Seeing the church outside of my diocese from which I'm studying has just been so rich. And even part of the mission of the North American College is to help its seminarians grow in love for the Roman pontiff. And I was just like, man, to have that on our mission statement is incredible. I also can see St. Peter's, the dome of St. Peter's from my room, and sometimes I just have to stop and think, wow, like, I'm really here.
It's right across the street from my house, as you know. talk about views. The room with the view.
And just meeting the Holy Father as well. It's like, it has really just helped widen my view of the church as well.
I, on occasion, hear him mention the North American College staff and seminarians at an Angelus on Sunday, and sometimes... have you been received in a Wednesday audience? Because there's usually one meeting like that, too.
There was one last year with all the seminarians of Rome.
Oh, that's right.
All the different seminaries.
Yeah, where he kind of gave an exhortation to us to live in equilibrium and just helped us.
Sure.
He was very pastoral. I remember he was telling some stories of his time in the parish.
So
sharing some of those stories that you might not hear otherwise. And
It's when he speaks off the cuff with those personal stories learn more about him.
It was really beautiful to hear him share that and sharing some of his encouragement and formation for us.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Now, I'd love to know from each of you your expectations for the priesthood. So you've got a couple more years to go. However, you have to be, as you're sitting here, you have expectations. Patrick?
I have very, very good expectations for the strength of the priesthood. And I can only say that living here in Rome, seeing other men who I go to school with, other men whom I live with, of course, their witness to virtue, how they live, how they pray. It's very edifying day in and day out. The priests who live with us as well, the Holy Father, and all of that just contributes in some way.
But I'm sure both of you have thought and maybe even been shaken up by the idea of how many people in your life, your decades, God willing, as a priest, you will have an effect on. You will teach. You will preside at marriages. You will preside at funerals. You will have First Communions. You will hear a confession. Does that ever, I don't know what word to use, overwhelm is too powerful, but does that ever kind of crawl through your mind?
You know, a little bit here and there. I remember a priest in a parish growing up saying, you never know what your words or actions might do or have an effect on someone. And that really just kind of blew my mind. But if someone ever kind of comes up to you and says, you know, when you said something, this really moved me in this way, just to have that disposition of humility to be like, okay, like that's incredible. Give the Lord the glory that is due in that moment and keep on moving forward.
Sure. And your expectations for priesthood?
Yeah, I'm very hopeful. I think that'd be the word I'd say. I think just in my life, I've seen the ways that the Lord is able to use my gifts to bring an encounter between Him and somebody else. So I look forward to the ways which I can't even imagine. They're just beyond my ability to to imagine. The ways that the Lord will use my time here in Rome, my time before seminary, in seminary, and after seminary to bring His love to His people.
Sure.
And so, Jesus' love knows no bounds. So in any way that I could be a conduit for that, and that's really what formation is about, to be a conduit between God's love and to His people. And that gives me a lot of hope, because the Lord loves His people so much. And so I look forward to seeing the ways, those providential ways, that the Lord continues to work through His priest.
Oh, sure. And there's so many. You know, just a couple more things before our time runs out. And I can't overlook the fact that today there are problematic issues facing the church, and we have traditional media, we have social media looking at sex abuse issues, divisions, what people are labeling as divisions between people they label as progressives and conservatives, or sometimes traditionals. The division on papal pronouncements or documents, etc. Sometimes I look at some of the stuff that I see, especially on social media, and it's like, oh my word, this is absolutely not the truth at all. What can I do? And sometimes I try to respond with gentleness and diplomacy to a statement which could mislead many people. But what do you think today, with the media and the social media, what is it important for people, those of us in the pew, what is important for us to know, and how do we know the truth? Patrick?
Regarding social media, I wouldn't know what to say precisely, just because I'm not a part of that atmosphere and kind of the controversies that go on in that area. However, having encountered some people and knowing what they say, and you can tell they're kind of enmeshed in this sphere of friends that always kind of have that feeding into their conversation and their atmosphere. As a hopeful priest, I pray, helping them to know at the end of the day that they are loved by Jesus Christ. I think that is one of the most important means for them, amidst all of their
anguish
and whatever they may be thinking alongside their line of thought. I think there does exist some division in the church, and there's a lot of controversy about what people say and certain groups and factions. However, the priest, I think, is someone who is able to meet all of those people where they are. For us to learn that, I think, is very important, because we are, in some sense, mediators between them and Jesus. And so learning how to be that man to all of these people is kind of a daunting task. I kind of swallow when I hear that, and learning how to do that. But it's what I'm called to do, and I pray that the Lord will give me the grace
to answer their questions, to bring them to the truth.
Exactly.
I know is my whole goal. Mm-hmm. And how would you handle those situations where, well, especially you feel that you're talking to someone who you feel, or they have just told you, that basically what they're saying about the church they've learned online, or the newspaper article, instead of what Father said at Mass in his homily or whatever. So how do you, what do you say to people who come to you with this kind of a doubt?
I think my first reaction, I think, is to be happy that they came and asked the priest a question.
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, similar, Pastor, to what you were saying, the priest really is the first responder. And he's like in the battle with the people. Like that, he's like, if there's an issue, the parish priest is there. And so when the people have a question, the priest rejoices when someone comes and asks that question, as opposed to staying in a place of doubt or darkness or isolation, which can really often be the case in social media.
Of course,
for as connected as we are by different webs of the internet and media and everything else, but for all that we're connected, we often feel isolated. So to reach out in any way to the priest and ask for his help, that's a work of the Holy Spirit, I think. And
absolutely.
So, like, I love, like, if someone were to come to me with a question about the faith, I'm overjoyed to hear that they cared enough to ask the question. And of course, the response is going to be dependent on what they're asking. But yeah. First of all, I would thank them for coming. Really,
that's the first thing I was think you would do. Yeah, exactly. Okay, now just the final question of our conversation, and that is, if there's a young man listening to this conversation who in the back of his mind had some little seed planted and maybe is thinking of a vocation, if you were sitting right next to him, what would you say?
I would say the same thing that my home pastor told me growing up, prayer and the sacraments. Without that, you can't miss God's will.
Wonderful.
Very simply.
Can't be any easier. And Nicholas?
Yeah, I would say that God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. That's a kind of a trite saying, but it's really true. Because I remember when I was getting ready to go to seminary, I thought I had to be fully formed as a man and as a priest before I entered the seminary, which is just impossible. I thought I had to have my whole life figured out before I said yes. But no, it's actually the Lord forms you in order to say yes, and that's what happens in formation. So you don't have to enter seminary knowing exactly what your life's going to be or whether you're going to be a priest. The first discernment really is, am I called to be a seminarian? I think is really the first step of discernment. Do I think that the Lord is calling me to seminary? I think is an easier first step as opposed to, is the Lord calling me to be a priest? So that's what I would recommend.
Well, I, for years, have prayed daily for vocations and for seminarians and for priests. But in any event, I want to thank the person not here tonight, and that is, of course, Bishop Rhodes, for sending the two of you to Rome. What a wonderful dinner we had, and what a wonderful conversation we just had. I know so many people are going to find joy and hope, the two words you used tonight. They're going to find joy and hope in our conversation. So God bless you both, and thank you for coming. And
Thanks, John.
Very much, Nicholas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information on these stories or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.